It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And we're here. Ready to go. Ready to go, even just a few days out from Christmas time. It is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Captain Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine, but I don't see anything with a bow around here with my name on it.
There's a bow in my truck. There's a rifle in my Oh, you mean, like a present bow. Yeah. I'll have to go find one here. You know what? Go wrap up. What do you want me to wrap up? Probably a 150-class deer, put a bow on it?
That would be excellent.
While I'm shopping, can you get
Dylan's
me a 100?
Name on it, okay. Not mine.
All right. Can you, if you go shopping, if you get one of those and put a bow on it for me, that'll work too.
I had a present out in the truck for you, but I wasn't going to bring it in unless I had one from you.
Oh, okay. That's the Christmas spirit. Hey, lots to talk about on this pre-Christmas edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Captain Charlie Gray from Gray Gulf Charters will join us later on the show. We'll talk about some wintertime fishing at the south end of the bay. I got to pick his brain on if the ground mullet bite is on. I saw, man, this was back on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, we had gone. I think I posted some pictures on our Facebook page. We had talked about it. I headed down to Heron Bay area down there on Thanksgiving Day.
Right, I remember
that. It was cold,
that, yeah.
Cold, and it took the kids out, go catch some redfish, and we caught big speckled trout and some redfish. But there's a man at the bait shop there, said, you like catching ground mullet or something? I'm just walking across the parking lot to go back across and launch a boat over there. And I said, yeah. And he said, come over here. And I was like, okay, this is weird. But he opens the cooler. He's got a darn ground mullet, Mike. I don't know the actual number. It looked like it was 3.5 pounds. It's the biggest dang ground. I mean, it looked like the body shape of a redfish.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just a stud.
That's big.
Stud. I went, holy cow. He said, we're catching them like that all the time. I'm like, darn it. And my kids heard that. If we go down there, I said, oh, we brought the boat down here. We're going in the boat. We're not going to go down the beach. But yeah, we'll pick Captain Charlie Gray.
He's catching them on the outside of Dolph now.
Exactly.
On the beach.
Front beach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said, and that was back at Thanksgiving. We'll see how they're doing now as we get a month later. But we'll talk to Captain Charlie Gray about that coming up in just a little bit on the show. When last week we talked, you were heading off. You had some hog work to do and some bucks to try to find. How'd that go?
Not good for either one of them.
Not good.
You know, hogs are crazy. I mean, I don't understand hogs at all. I mean, we had them so bad, and we still got them because I got pictures of them. Mm-hmm. But we were seeing them everywhere, every field we went to. We saw them, you know, in the middle of the road, going down the main road. They were in the roads. I mean, they were everywhere.
Yep.
And now it's like, where are they at? I mean, they coming in, but, I mean, I got pictures of them in the daytime, but I might be at one spot, and, you know, they at the other spot.
They're giving you the slip? Is that what's happening?
Yes, absolutely.
You've been outsmarted by the hogs?
Oh, yeah. I get outsmarted by everything. But in the deer, I mean, I guess we're in the December doldrums. We haven't shot a deer all year. You know, that's unusual. Mm-hmm. Usually we've gotten one or two by now, but we haven't done anything. We've got a couple deer that we're targeting, trying to shoot before we start. You know, we got several that we're shooting. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of them that are, you know, decent deer we want to shoot, and we just haven't seen them in the daylight hours. I saw one of them one time. I didn't have Dylan with me. I went up there and went fishing.
That's what happened.
It was late in the afternoon, and I was going to try to get to the shooting house before deer started coming in, but I was too late, and one of the deer was in the field already, you know. So anyway, that's the way it goes, but that's the only time I've seen the deer in one of the deer in the daylight hours. The rest of the time, they're at night. But now they come in the daylight, you know, but I'm just not there. We're not there when they're coming out. So anyway, but hogs fascinate me, Sean, because I don't understand what they do. I don't know. It seems like they would keep coming, but they don't. And it's like they just leave, and, you know, they don't come out at daylight hours.
Well, okay, there's a couple of things I'm hearing from you right now that make me think a couple of different things are happening. Number one, you know, I've watched them. I had to deal with them much longer because of the time I've hunted in the river swamp. You haven't had to deal with them as long. And in the swamp, the more pressure you put on them, the more nocturnal they get. I mean, they're like anything. And so if people say, yeah, man, we've seen them everywhere, and we really whacked them and shot them and ran some dogs, but now we're not seeing them. they wised up. The ones that survived, I mean, they go nocturnal. Now, you let them be for 10 days, and it's amazing how fast they return to somewhat of a daylight pattern, but it also depends on weather. The colder it is, just like a deer, they're going to have to eat more. They're going to get on their feet more.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have this patch of weather we're running through right now, 60s, 40s kind of stuff. Right? They don't have to – I mean, they still have to eat, obviously, but it's not a big pressure on them. But they're smart. They're smart. The more pressure you put on them.
That's what I'm figuring out. I mean, I've like you say, I've never had food with hogs much, very little. And now I'm having a food with them.
Right.
And they seem to be smarter than I thought they were.
The more pressure you put on them, and that's why if you – what you're doing is just managing on the edges and having some fun recreation-wise.
That's all you can do.
I'll say this. Even with – and this is something we talked about with Chuck Sykes before, of course, the director of – Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, and one of the hosts of the Management Advantage. But he's our state. How cool is it that the guy that has the TV show is head of our state Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries? But he's talked about it with us many times. You and I have talked about it many times. I've seen it in action on some private properties. I've seen it in action up at Portland Landing, where they have the new SOA, and I want to talk about that in a second. That, you know, if you run, and I'm not anti, don't, before you compose the email, let me tell you, I'm not against you running dogs to go catch hogs. That's cool, but that's recreation. It's like I'm not against me shooting one with my longbow, but that's recreation.
Yeah.
Even like we had over the years, a single catch traps, the one where you go in and they step on a plate in the back and it drops the thing. You might catch, sometimes we caught three, you know, if they got real greedy. That's just harvested meat. Until you go to what they're doing. Now, these rigs are so expensive. I get it, and that's been the issue, but the only way I've seen people actually put real dents in hog populations over broader areas are these corral traps.
Right.
And you've seen the people, right? The corral sections, you put up a big section. They'll have either one or two gates, y'all. Not just trapdoor thing. I mean, gate-sized deals to let the hogs come in. I mean, they'll be like 6 feet wide, these gates. And you start feeding the hogs in there and get them used to it. Actually, the people who are doing a good job of it will go feed the hogs without the trap there. They'll pick a spot on the property and start feeding hogs and get them coming there. Just a field or where they throw corn in. Then they come in and put the corral panels up around where they've been feeding corn and continue to put corn. And those automated traps have cameras on them.
Right.
They use cellular technology, number one, to drop the trap doors, but more importantly, to run these cameras. And you run the camera and you look over days and days. You don't drop the doors the first day you see hogs.
Yeah.
You're looking how many total hogs. And then, because there might be seven
here.
Get
the whole family in there.
Right. And so they get them to where, at some point, you get the whole bunch of them in there. And then you drop the doors.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you put a real dent in it. So once again, I'm not against that. I've shot them for my whole life. And if you got some good dogs, I'm going to go run with you. That's fun.
Yeah.
But it's sport at that point. It's not management.
Right.
Unless you go to these big traps. You know, even night hunting, which is cool, and I love watching those videos and guys got the night, that's a lot more effective than daytime hunting for them, but it's still never going to, because you shoot and some run off.
That's right. You only get one or two, and then, you know, you got to go try to find some more.
And that's hunting. That's going out, and that's going out, you know, if you're hunting with dogs or hunting with your bow or a rifle, whatever, that's hunting, and that's okay. But if you say we're going to manage and get rid of them, I've not seen anything that's even in the same neighborhood as these traps, these big corral traps with the drops. The
problem is they're expensive.
They're very expensive. I mean, between the cheapest ones I've seen are around $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, and they go up. There's some of them that are like, I think one's like $11,000 or something. The key to this, and if the, by the way, just take a second here and bring the weekday show into the mix for the outdoor show here.
Yeah.
And I was talking about it, I think, this last week. A farm bill passed, right? The farm bill, every 4 years, it gets reauthorized.
Yeah.
Farm bill gets reauthorized. In that, there are, I forget how many, how much money it is. I could go back and check the numbers because Congressman Bradley Byrne was on the show with us and was pointing out, and I'll get the number. Tell you what, when we come back from the break, I'll have the number for you. But the money that was allocated to the state of Alabama specifically to deal with the feral hog problem. Okay.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, in the Farm Bill. Farm Bill has millions and millions going around the country to deal with feral hog problem. And then the allocation for Alabama, because what it does for Alabama farmers, you know, we think about it for deer hunting. What if you're a farmer and you're growing peanuts? You know, what if you're growing beans?
Rooting up all the peanuts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it is a real problem for farmers. So they've allocated this money. You know, I said this, I think, in the interview during the week. I didn't want to get too in-depth to it during the regular weekday show. But I would suggest if the state
and hopefully we'll talk to some folks at the state. My suggestion, I'd love the debate. If you want to hop on, send me an email. If they could take some of that money and put a matching dollar amount or kind of a subsidy so landowners could buy these corral traps.
Yeah.
Because they are expensive.
Yeah.
And if they could say, you know what, the state of Alabama has this fund to help deal with feral hogs, farmers and property owners over X amount of acres, whatever it would be. So, and we have to work out what's, you know, what helps the most number of people.
Right.
That the state of Alabama up to this amount will match your money going into one of these. So if the trap's $5,000, maybe there's a $2,000 match that you get or something like that, a check from the state that subsidizes your purchase of these. Because that's a limiting factor here for more people not using these traps. You're exactly right. I'm one of them. I know how they work, but I can't spend that on a trap.
Me either.
The little, you know, when you get a $400 single catch trap or something like that, a lot of people get those. But these big corral traps are expensive. The technology makes them expensive because they got a camera. You know, they got the automatic servo to drop the gate. But if the state is getting this,
you have to have phone signal.
Right, right. But you can use boosters and do a couple different things to make that easier. So what I'm getting at is, if there's money coming through the farm bill, maybe we can use it as some kind of subsidy.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll talk about that. Come back. I'll give you some of those numbers. I'll go check that press release from Congressman Burns' office and tell you those numbers. And also, I want to talk a little bit more. So the hogs, your thing, your bucks are not where they need to be. But you know what? The good days are coming.
I hope so.
The good days are coming. Also, speaking of the good days coming, right now, I want to give you a heads up real fast here, and then we'll talk about this when we get back. But go over to OutdoorAlabama.com. Go to the SOA area, the special opportunity, because if you want to go on one of these SOA hunts for turkeys this year, application period ends, I think, the 3rd of January. So you better get cracking. We'll address that when we get back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Yeah, and I went back and checked the documents, and I do not see a number here. What I'll do is if I get that during the show, I'll pass along. Here it says in the new farm bill, nationally, there's money for feral swine control, and then an email from Bradley Burns' office says this is also coming to the state of Alabama. And I thought, I hate to be misquoted, I thought it was in the millions, but I don't, or 750,000 or something like that, but I don't have that number in front of me. It was substantial.
Yeah, that's just what verbally Burns said.
Yeah, I think so. Because it says here, the 2018 Farm Bill sets the country's agricultural policy for the next 5 years, yada, yada, yada. Includes provisions critically important to Alabama's cotton and peanut farmers, maintains access to crop insurance through reduced premiums and waived fees, includes critical funding for feral swine control. And what I was suggesting here, and I'll try to get you that number, is whatever the number is, I know there may be something else, maybe buying more traps for the state to use, but we have, in the state of Alabama, way more private land than we do public land.
Sure.
Okay. And the hog issue is probably split between all of them. Well, public lands have a lot of hogs, but our private lands have a lot. And these traps that really do a good job, these automated traps, these are the ones that really get it done, where you catch the whole sounder, get all of them at one time.
They really work.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that works. I know.
Everything else is hunting. And I'm not against hog hunting. I'm just saying, if you're saying, hey, we're managing, if you're out shooting with your rifle, you're not managing, you're hunting.
Yeah.
You're having fun. Cool.
Yeah.
Hogs are good to eat, but you're not managing.
Yeah.
Okay. So if there's this money coming out of federal dollars, money, farm bill money for feral swine, what about some kind of matching funds from the state of Alabama using that money where people who want to buy one of these traps but can't come off $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 for something like this, the state could match half or something, some kind of incentive to help people get these traps and get them put out. That's just, you know, my I'll keep working on that. and let you know. And if we have something on that tube breaking, I'll put it up on the Facebook page. Lots of stuff on the Facebook page over the last week or so. I want you to check out several articles over there. One about as hunting declines, efforts to broaden the funding base for wildlife conservation have become a kind of an issue here. We talked in the past about license sales.
Right.
What that means for federal excise taxes coming back to the states to acquire public land and put in boat ramps and all those kind of things. But that's based on the number of hunting and fishing licenses sold in the state. That's a big deal. That story's up there on the Facebook page. And also, our only one question. It was your only one question from last week. So we had, 2 weeks ago, we had said if you could only have one rifle to do all your hunting with, what would it be? And really had a great discussion there. And then this week, the question this last week was for Gulf Coast anglers only. And the reason I pointed that out is if you're North Alabama or something, it's not as hard
totally
of a question.
Different.
We're asking this question for those of us down here that have so many options. So the question was, if you could only have one boat to do all your fishing from, what would it be? And by the way, somebody suggested, well, you didn't include duck boats. I said fishing. You can still have a duck boat.
Yeah.
You still have a duck boat. So this is for your fishing. So Skip says here, Skip, are you just trying to get on my good side? I like Skip. He said, buy an old 24 Kenner and repower it. Well, I hadn't repowered mine, but I got an old 24 Kenner. That's what I run.
That's exactly what you got.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He said, or a 25 Blackjack.
That's a great boat.
To me, that's my one boat because I don't use it as much in the Delta because I have other boats, but if I had to, it's fine. Boat. I could bass fish in the Delta from it. I can trout and redfish in the Delta from it. I can fish, obviously, anywhere in the bay and do all that. And then you look at my pictures. I mean, I use it to catch snapper, run snapper trips, all season long with the family.
Sure.
So it's my go-to boat. It does it for me. Matt suggests a chartered one.
A chartered one.
Yeah. Our buddy Pat Richley, my buddy, his boat, he suggests his boat. He's got a 21 Privateer, 21.8 Privateer Roamer. That's a cool boat he's got. He's got an out bracket on it. It is a great one boat. We've had it in the shallowest water and down in Venice, Louisiana, back in duck holes and getting P-Rows out. And we've had it in thousands of feet of water fishing tuna down there. So
that sounds like you and Pat.
Yeah. Frank says here, Frank Foley, hey, Frank, 24 Blazer with a 300 Yamaha with a tower and dual power poles and a 36-volt iPilot. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. My buddy Rick, who runs the same kind of boat I do, he says 24 Kenner.
Yeah.
Listen, this is going to sound like it's all my buddies and I just touting 24 Kenners. Larry G. Kirby says Blackjack 25.6. Already have a Blackjack 22.4, but we are dreaming here. The 25.6 with the Yamaha 350 pushing it. Now, that's a nice ride. That is a nice ride.
Yep.
Our buddy Greg says here, the one I'm fixing to start building this winter, a 14-foot bateau skiff or this highly modified kayak that I've been fishing out of. Yeah, he's got he does, by the way, Gregory D. Spruill on Facebook. He does some guided kayak fishing. He's got some really highly modified kayaks. In other words, Mike, you'd like them.
They got motors on them.
They got motors on them.
Oh yeah, and I like that.
See, but every time we've ever had the discussion of kayaks here and fishing, you're always like, if you put a motor on it.
Yeah.
John Squires says 19-foot Bass Tracker with a Mercury 150. Ben says 18-foot Polar Craft center console with a 125 on the back. Hashtag flatfish beware. Our buddy Ben, he lays it down on some flounder.
Yeah.
Kinfolk of yours?
Oh, my gosh. There's no telling. Probably had to censor this one.
Yeah, I have to. So Philip says here, a Sea Hunt 24BX with a Yamaha 250, small enough to inshore fish, big enough to go catch snapper and king if you wanted to. I wouldn't even be opposed to bass fishing in the river in it. By the way, the rules don't say you have to be able to afford it, do they? No, we're all just dreaming here, and I mean, but the funny thing is, in a do it all boat, because that's what prevents me from saying, oh, where I get a 80-foot, sport fisher.
Oh yeah,
because it's a do it all
boat. There's
a
breaking point.
Yeah, there's a point.
There's a breaking point on the big, and there's a breaking point on the small.
Right. So that's the point that, it's. And it's this game we play. Now, in reality, we know as Gulf Coast anglers, the best answer is you can't just have one boat to do everything. You got to have,
That's my opinion.
Two, three, four. What did somebody tell me? He said the equation over the weekend was N plus one. N represents, this guy had some engineering and math. He said N represents the number of boats you have. So the answer to your question, Sean, is N plus one. In other words, however many boats you have plus one more is the right answer for how many boats you should have.
Yeah.
So we appreciate that, and everybody chiming in over at the Facebook page. Probably going to take this week off with Christmas, but we'll be back to our only one. And tell you what, too, I'm going to send us an email or reach out on the Facebook page. Y'all are a big part of this. So if you have a suggestion for the only one question of the week, you know, we've done rifles, we've done boats, but it could be tree stands, it could be trucks, it could be ATVs, it could be archery equipment, it could be a turkey call, it could be, I'm saving this one for later, but if you could only hunt one species, So we'll be doing this each week, and we appreciate y'all chiming in over at facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Also, let's see, on the list, so since last we talked, I chased a couple things here. You went up and chased the hogs that were hiding from you and the deer.
Yep.
They are hiding. And I was going to chime in, too. We've only killed one deer off our place. I shot that 8-point.
Yeah, that's unusual for you.
Yeah, I haven't been able to go as much. Yeah. So, because I've got to kill some does.
Yeah, that's been a little bit of our problem, and the weather's been bad. Mm-hmm. You know, weekends, for several weekends, it rained.
It's like this weekend, Christmas parties and things all the time. And
we was watching football a couple of days, went to the football game.
Tell everybody that.
Weekend,
nobody's going to even think this is an outdoor show because we're not going.
Yeah. We're going.
Because I went, I last weekend went duck hunting. I hit the causeway for a little bit, and I killed some ducks.
Yeah.
And enjoyed that big south wind to the higher water and got up there and killed some ducks and had an okay hunt. And definitely there's some ducks, new ducks in. They're also wise. Some of the ones have been here for a while are wise. Some of the new ones are working the decoys, but the causeway hunt was okay. It wasn't the best. I'm not going to say it's gangbusters, but it's not as bad as I heard the reports from back after Thanksgiving.
Are the new sanctuary areas, are they helping some?
Great.
They're doing good.
That sanctuary there between the causeway and I-10 is holding a bunch of ducks. And if you hunt anywhere in the South Delta, you watch what happens. During the day, those ducks get hungry. See, they don't get run out to the middle of the bay. They don't get run over to Southeast Louisiana. They stay here.
Yeah.
And they get up in smaller groups and fly into the bays and work. And you have a chance to hunt them then. Our ducks, except for one group I didn't see where it came from, the other ducks we had in the decoys, we watched them. Watch them come up and from that direction and come over.
Yeah.
So that's working out. I have not gotten to hunt in either of the no motor zones this year. You know, Big Batty's a no motor zone and Bay Grass is a no. I have not. Hopefully, maybe over this Christmas holiday, I'll get out there and chase that. Then I did a little hunting at the camp. Didn't see too much while I was hunting, some little bucks and does, but I did actually have a chance to pull some camera cards. And from some cameras have been out a while. Yeah. You know, usually I can't stand it about every, which is the wrong thing to do. Do not do like I do, where you can't stand it and you pull those cards every 7 days or every 10 days. These had sat out for 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks and really had gotten a lot of pictures and gave me what I did not get, a real good survey of what I have on the property back in September, October. Usually when I do it, I pour a bunch of corn feeders and put the cameras up to get the pictures of the deer before season starts. Well, I got them. They were out long enough that on enough trails that I got you're seeing some of the same bucks and same groups at different cameras. So you get an idea that you're kind of seeing most of what you have.
Right.
And, you know, it's just the ongoing frustration. I mean, if you go back through and I wonder how many other people feel this way. If you go through my pictures from game cameras been hunting this place 14 years.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
I have the same. You could duplicate the pictures every year.
Every year.
The 100-inch 8-points.
Yeah.
I can check. If you want 100-inch 8-point, I'll have 6 or 7 of them every year.
Yeah.
And next year, I'll let them all go. They don't get killed, at least not by us.
Yeah.
Next year, I got 6 or 7 100-inch 8-points.
Yeah, you keep thinking, well, next year they're going to be 115, 120, 125, you know, and then you go get your pictures, you look at them, or you hunt. It's the same, seems like the same old deer keeps coming out
even though you're like,
time again.
I know over 14 years, it's not.
We've been talking about that forever. I mean, we'd be letting those 125, 130, 135, 40
grass
and
up where you are, that's a different,
you know, and we say, boy, next year, boy, you know, we're going to have those 150, 160 inch, you know, and it just didn't work out that way. And, you know, we were hunting inside a game fence.
Yeah, so
weren't getting killed.
Right.
You know, and we kept saying, boy, next year, boy, we let them go. We're going to get them. Don't work out that way.
So there we go. Hopefully a new one shows up, but that's it. Coming back, we're going to talk some fishing with Captain Charlie Gray. And then when we wrap up, we have a little time here at the end. We'll talk some more throw and mow. Got more text messages and questions about my throw and mow. My fields are looking great, and I didn't put a single disc blade in the ground this season. right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. And we'll tell you again at the end of the show, but Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
That's right.
Happy New Year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we talk about this time of year. We talked a whole bunch of hunting so far on the show, but it is a time of year, too, that some of maybe not the species we are always talking about during the summer are first and foremost in our mind, like ground mullet and white trout. Tell you what, you know, you've heard me talk about this before. A fresh ground mullet fried or fresh white trout fried, forget about it. I'm in.
I love it.
And that's one of the big stories at the south end of the bay. And we check in with Captain Charlie Gray from Gray Gulf Charters, which, let me say, first of all, Merry Christmas. And I like the new design work, too. This is cool stuff. Talk about the merchandising.
Yeah, man. Merry Christmas, guys. Or as we say down here, Merry Fishmas.
A couple things here I want to talk about with you. Number one, ground mullet, white trout, and sheephead. But also, I want to kind of get your opinion. Only one question on the Facebook page last week. You know, 2 weeks ago we did, if you could only have one rifle to hunt deer. Last week, if you could only have one boat, and this is something you and I have probably talked about during a fishing trip before, but you could only have one boat to do all your fishing. And that means if you want to go up to the Delta or out to catch snapper or anywhere in between, you only get one boat. What is your choice?
I'd get with Eddie Negus and Don Negus and make a center console, 17 center console Negus. It was lightweight that you could move around in, have a little more room.
There you go.
Concept they had talked about at one time, but if I had to design one, that's what I'd do. I'd go with try to find a boat, almost like a flat boat with a little more sides to it, you know, where you can run the chop.
Yep. And that, we'll put that on the list because we've had a bunch of different suggestions, but that one is not on there yet. This kind of idea, you know, and when I put the post up on Facebook, I excluded anybody who wasn't from around here because if you live up in North Alabama and you just bass fish
totally
or you live somewhere else, it's not the same. But folks around here, we got the option of catching everything from a brim to a tuna, you know, and it's a kind of a tough question if you had to just pick one boat.
Well, it's not. Charlie didn't answer it the way I thought he was going to answer it. I just knew it was going to be a 25-foot contender.
But if he has to go, up and brim fish in it,
he can brim fish out of a 25-foot contender.
Charlie,
can't you,
tough,
Charlie?
Mikey. Huh? It'd be tough up in that Delta. I'd be a little. You can do it. Sure, you can do it. You can do anything in a contender, Mike.
Now we talking. That's what I think you was thinking.
That's going to be the new ad campaign, using your awesome 25 contender to go brim fishing. I can't wait to see those pictures. All right, let's talk about what's going on at your end of the bay down on Dauphin Island. Ground mullet, man, that's a big thing during the wintertime on the island.
Ground mullet. It's not like ground pork or ground beef. It's ground mullet.
Yeah, like they're on the ground.
Kingfish.
Yes.
Kingfish. Mullet on the ground, yeah, and you can tell when you pull them up, they got that dirty little belly and chin. They've been down there feeding on the bottom, but they're kind of clean on the Gulf side right now. And, you know, go up to your local bait shop and just get you some fresh dead shrimp. You may sometimes they want them peeled, sometimes they don't. Just get you a two-hook rig, a bridge rig, we call them. It's got two hooks on it and then another piece of mono there on the end with a swivel for your bait, or excuse me, for your weight. And I usually use about a 1 ounce bank sinker, pyramid sinker, and just throw it out there to the far as you can get toward the second sandbar. And if you've got a rod holder to put in on the beach, some people fish up to 4 to 6 rods when they're really getting going. And if you're going to do this now, you need to get on down there because it's a lot of competition. These guys go to the same spots every day, and they kind of hold their own spot. So
well, you bring up a good point. Are there spots? Is not the whole beach created equally, or is there some places that are better? Okay, explain that to us.
Not. Yeah, well, you want to just kind of, you know, there's certain access points you can park on Dauphin Island now. And just you'll see a lot of people there, and some of these guys come down every year from up north. Our versions of snowbirds, and that's what they do. They bring 4 to 6 rods, and they get the spots, but. You know, the West End Beach is a good place. The Public Beach is a good place. Seahoy Street down there is a good place. But you just gotta look for your breaks between the two sandbars and where you got some good washout and you got some good water flowing. And Now, look out, too. Now, be ready, because the big redfish come through there, too, and hold on.
Yeah, that's right.
Pick it up and run, too.
Yeah, that's it. Could be a tackle disaster when that happens. You mentioned those breaks and those bars. If you're pitching and I want to go back in a second to the rig you make to catch those ground mullet, but are you pitching up onto the sandbar, or are you letting it go down in the trough? Where do you throw?
In the trough, but you want to try different things. You know, some guys will throw out. These old-timers are good at this stuff now. They'll throw out as far as they can past the second sandbar if they can get on the wash on the other side. Then they'll throw in between the two, and then they'll throw in some deeper water just all around. Just put them at different levels so you find out where the fish are. And once you find those fish, you need to concentrate on that spot because that's where they're going to be.
They kind of tell you, okay, so you do some exploring, and then I guess you can call it a pattern, right? That day the pattern is they're whatever. They're up on the bar. They're in the trough there.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's why you have six or eight rods.
Right. And you want to go back for a second here. You're talking about your rig. Let's say here we're coming either mono or braid out of the rod, and I would suggest probably spinning rods are best for this, but you may disagree.
Yeah.
Coming down, what's the first thing? Do we go to a swivel, and then what happens? Kind of walk us back through this.
Yeah, go to the swivel, and then you can buy these rigs pre-made. That's mm-hmm. the way to do it, because you've got three different branches to the rig, effectively. So you've got the long piece, and then you've got a couple of hooks that come off of it. You want to, on the bottom one, there'll be a swivel, and you want to put your 1 ounce, at least 1 ounce, sometimes more, depending on how much current's running, weight on the bottom, and then you'll have your hooks come off the side. And I use like a number two live bait hook. Some guys use, you know, the 6, 7, 8 kale hooks or something like that. So either way, whatever, just a single hook. You don't want a treble hook or anything. And then get you a piece of nice, fresh, dead shrimp and hook on those rigs and just toss it out and you know,
hold
your
on.
Beverage of choice and have a good night. Yeah.
All right. And so, yeah, good idea. People get fresh, dead shrimp, and then that rig, they're good to go. What about the white trout? Are you use a similar setup, or are you rigging differently? And where are you going for these big wintertime white trout?
Yeah, you can use anything for white trout, but actually a voodoo with a little scent on it or something like that, shrimp imitation, any kind of cut bait, even cut mullet, you know, dead shrimp, anything like that. And I'm fishing for those, I'm doing a little differently. I'm using my regular old average everyday run-of-the-mill slip cork rig, you know, and just getting down around the boat, 6 to 8 feet of water. I'm fishing some structure down to the west that we fish, you know, during the summer, anything that's got a little structure on it, any of the rig poles and that kind of stuff.
What about that? If somebody found a nice patch of weather, which is going to be, but if you had nice conditions wave-wise, would you get out on the gas rigs? Would you get out on the gas rigs in the bay, lower end of the bay? Are there white trout there?
Sure, white trout are there, and you'll start seeing some sheephead for too long, too. There's some that are already here, and if you start losing your bait, filling up, you're not feeling anything, that means you've got some nice sheephead around. So it'll be time for them, especially with this cold weather, yeah.
So, okay, Mike?
Yeah, do the white trout like the deeper water? You know, would they be in like the 20-foot water, or are they up in the 6 or 8 foot water?
We normally look for them in 6 or 8 feet of water, you know, stay up around the rocks. It seems to be more structure around the Katrina Cut rocks, you know, where,
right.
where the jetty rock is, that area, or around that Katrina Cut rig out there just north of there, any of that kind of structure, Mike.
Yeah, I know up in the Mobile River right now, they're catching them in deep water, in 15, 20 foot of water up on
that's
the Mobile
River. That's all,
yes,
there, is
all there is. Yeah, I guess so. I guess all the fresh water is up top, but, you know, they are catching
exactly
them deep
right.
up there. And they're catching some pretty big ones up
deep.
There.
It's just that fresh water's got everything pushed down, yeah. Same
right.
with the canal and the tidal rivers, too.
And I would think there's a fair amount of fresh water down towards Dolphin Island right now, too. Isn't it?
If not, if we got a lot of rain this last week again. We had a good break for a couple of days, but then it came back with a vengeance, as it did up in Mobile, too.
Yeah.
And by the way, just joining us, talking to Charlie Gray, Captain Charlie Gray from Gray Gulf Charters. Let me just say this before we might run out of time here. I don't know who did your work. If you did it, I never knew you had it in you, but your new logo for Gray Gulf Charters, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. The top side is 25 contender. The bottom side is a blackfish. That is really cool.
Yeah, I got a buddy who's he does, you know, all that kind of stuff, graphic design work, T-shirts, just about anything.
Well, he's good.
And that kind of stuff.
He's good. He needs to be my buddy because that's great.
I gave him some ideas, and he ran with it. He got that done in less than a week. I just threw the idea at him and pitched what I wanted. I gave him some topics, and I really wanted a redfish or a speckled trout to be the fish, but they were too thin. It didn't look right.
No, it's awesome. It's it's awesome. I mean, I wouldn't have thought about putting a triple tail blackfish underneath like that, but he made the right decision because that's probably the coolest looking logo of any captain on the Gulf Coast. I mean, hats off. That is awesome.
It looks good. It really does. Well, it looks great.
I got you a T-shirt coming then. How about that?
That's even better.
I really like that. That's a pretty T-shirt.
Well, somebody wants to, you know, I know you have it up on your Facebook page for Great Gulf Charters. Will people be able to buy these down the road?
Yeah. We'll be selling them, that's for sure. We'll Instagram or Facebook, or just you can contact me, and I'll give the numbers here in a minute, and be glad to get y'all some T-shirts out. And the cool thing about the blackfish, what we didn't think about till the end, was that's what they do. It's underneath the structure.
That's right.
It's hiding underneath. So the fish is under your boat.
Yeah. It is really awesome. I want y'all, if you're listening to us talk right now, and Captain Charlie will give us more, but I can tell you, go right now to Facebook for Great Gulf Charters, and you'll see that picture of that new logo. Really awesome. All right. You mentioned the white trout, you mentioned the sheephead, and you said the sheephead showing up. Usually, that's something we're talking about, man, in February, right? That's our Mardi Gras fish.
Yeah. They're not here that thick yet, but they're here. And I don't know if they're already, if it's the same thing we talked about a minute ago about the cold water and the cold weather and the water pushing them all offshore, and they think it's time to spawn. But, you know, they're not in that mode yet, but they sure are in the lower bay, that's for sure. And I hear they're up in the upper bay still, too, which means they're coming on down. So.
And one question here, too, when I think about, and maybe it's different for each, but you're talking about ground mullet, talking about white trout, talking about sheephead. Do you have a favorite tide? Is it that you need tide? And if you do need tide, which one do you need?
Doesn't really matter as long as you got water moving.
Okay.
With the north wind, you're going to need more tides like we got coming this upcoming week. You know, we're going to have good tides. But last week when we went out, there was a nip tide on Sunday, and there was just nothing but the water was moving between the sandbars and made it, you know, workable, made it doable.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we've talked about in speckled trout fishing, is if you get in a situation where you have a weak tide, if you go somewhere shallow or compressed, it does magnify that tide and at least give you some movement.
Yeah, that's a great idea, yes.
All right, tell folks if they want to get a maybe even a limited time here, get a gift certificate for a Christmas gift, or be pestering you about one of those T-shirts, or getting their own trip booked for this winter or spring. How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, we're doing gift certificates. We're doing some of those for Christmas and birthdays and whatnot coming up, and maybe a Happy New Year gift for somebody. And we got the T-shirts too. But I'm at 251-379-5067. Charlie at GreatGulfCharters.com, on Instagram, Captain Charlie Gray Fishing, or on Facebook, Great Gulf Charters.
Right. Man, absolutely. And y'all go check out the fishing pictures and that logo. That is the coolest captain's logo on the Gulf Coast.
And I still think he's got a pretty good all-round boat.
It's
25 contenders.
It's got a blackfish under it.
Yeah.
The rest of us don't have a fish under our boat. Not that we know of. All right, coming right back, we'll wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and Merry Christmas to y'all. Merry Christmas to your crew.
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
And hopefully your Christmas gift will be lots of extra time to get out and get in the woods or get on the water.
I'm going to get a pass for that, I'm sure.
And hopefully we get some better weather, some good cold stuff. It doesn't look like we have anything really cold through at least Christmas. So
no, we don't.
Which makes fishermen, hey, if you're going to go catch ground mullet, like Captain Charlie Gray just talked about, then good, you're good to go.
Yeah, you know, we get some 60-degree weather, you know, and it's not great for hunting, but it's good for fishing.
That's right. And
thing is, around here, we got so many things we can do.
Yes, that's the great thing, and it's also the problem for guys like us.
Yes.
That's why we are like we are. We're,
you know, talking about the boats, you know, Charlie kind of surprised me a while ago when he said, you know.
Well, yeah, and I know the boat he's talking about.
Yeah.
I've seen drawings
that
Ed Negus had,
awesome.
You know,
yeah.
this this kind of do-it-all bay, you know, inshore, a little bit light offshore boat design. Yeah. I saw it drawn on a legal pad one time.
Yeah. You know, I guess it depends on this one boat deal, whether you a little more bay and offshore or a little more bay and inshore.
Right. And that's, know, that's what makes that discussion fun.
Yes. Yes. So if you're out in the bay, but then you like going up in the rivers, you're going to get one boat. But if you like out in the bay and then you want to go offshore, then that's another boat.
Yep.
Pretty much.
Yep.
You know, but that one boat, it's hard. That's
a
hard one.
And we do have an interesting fishery in the fact that because we have so little very shallow water inshore fishing, there's some flats and stuff, but that's not our story. We're a deep water fishery.
Right.
Right. We're not Southeast Louisiana.
No.
You know, Mobile Bay is a lot more like a Galveston Bay. I mean, when I fished the Redfish Tour, when I got down there, I was like, okay, this is similar, you know, even though they have flats down there further south, but we're a deep water fishery.
Yeah.
You know, even though I wade fish and catch plenty of trout and catch them, you know, but when I say I catch them shallow, catch them in the spring in 3 feet of water, but that's not 12 inches of water, right? We just don't do a lot of fishing like that. So that does help us with a boat that, you know, drafts.
Get a little bigger boat.
Yeah, you get a little bigger boat and you can fish more places, but you're exactly right. And that's what makes that our only one question from last week about the boat pretty interesting, because if you're somebody that, you didn't freshwater fish.
Yeah.
So you and I probably have the most challenge here, because I like catching everything from a brim to a tuna.
Yes.
And so that's what challenges me. And I think I'm real good with the boat I have now, that 24 Kenner. But it's kind of a big boat to go brim fishing and kind of a small boat to go offshore. But it's the one boat challenge. So you can revisit that. And while you're on our Facebook page, too, I want you all to check out a story I put up this week. Senate passing, and Senate and House have now passed that Modern Fish Act. It's gone to the president for his signature. We'll get into this. I talked to some people, with the state, and maybe in the next couple of weeks we'll address it. Right now, there's nothing really in there that's really codifying law of things that were already kind of being done. It's better. It's better.
Right.
And Bradley Burns said a 10% increase in snapper allowable harvest for this coming season. So there's some better things here. But it's not monumental stuff. But read through it, and we'll talk about it in shows coming up. Maybe there's something I missed.
At least it's not one day, one fish.
That's right. But there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. Basically, some of the things I said, they're codifying, like things we're doing with the snapper reporting, you know, with the Snap app, and Mississippi does with their tails and scales and all that.
Yeah.
It's the federal registry saying, okay, we accept this information coming from the states, and here's how we're going to use that in our in our modeling. So it is better. It is better. Yeah. It's not a bad thing, but it's those who say, oh, that fixed everything. It doesn't fix everything either, but it is an improvement. And I'm going to give credit where credit is due. It's better.
Yeah.
Details on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. You look for the post there that has Senate passes Modern Fish Act. You can read through from that. All right. Want to get a couple of more things checked off here. Number one, more questions about throwing Mo. You know, this is something usually we talk about in planting season, but I'll try
to
get
your picture a while ago.
Yeah, I'll try to post some of those pictures up. I've shown you some of my pictures here.
Awesome looking.
So my patches are, you know, I've been working my way into this over the years. Now this year, the first time, I'm 100% throwing mow. In the past, I've been like, I don't want to mess up. I'm still going to disc some fields. And this year, it actually worked. I just didn't have time either.
Yeah.
And I felt good enough on my test patches over the years that I knew how it worked. 100% throw and mow. All my patches look great.
Every one of them look good.
Yeah. And you'll see if I post some of these pictures up, I think I have in the past. If you look, you'll see, if you zoom in on the picture, you'll see that thatch I'm talking about. There's still dead grass and grass breaking down in the field. But the clover and the wheat and the Austrian winter peas and all that, up and over it.
Yeah.
But that thatch is still there because these seeds grow up. So, and we'll revisit this, you know, again in the future. The throw and mow process is not my invention. I'm copying people 100%.
Sure.
But it involves using a Roundup or glyphosate to come in late August, early September to your field, spray them, kill them. Okay, now you have dead grass, and hopefully when the grass dies, it pulls back some and opens up to the dirt below it.
Right.
You come in, you seed into that with a hopper or whatever you seed. I come in with a hopper with my fertilizer and my seed mix, and I put that out. Okay, so I'm riding through in a tractor, so people can picture this. There's dead brown grass in my fields. I'm riding through with the hopper, spreading seed and fertilizer. Then I come back through with the bush hog, and I drop that baby down, and I mow.
Right.
And I lay it on top. And that's it. In the past, I've run a cultipacker over it because I used to be going to my disc fields, and I already had my Colts Packer, so I'd roll over it this year. Just time-wise, I never even hooked the Colts Packer up, so I did nothing to tamp it down,
yeah,
other than, I guess, just riding through there. So we'll try to get some of those pictures up as well. And remember this show, if you want to listen to it again or didn't catch part of it, it's a podcast. We'll post that up probably half an hour from now, but also re-airs tonight at 11 o'clock and re-airs tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. So you can check it out then. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Have a great one. Prep Sports Report on the way next. And hey, Prep Sports Report, Merry Christmas to y'all too.